Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Dr. Lance Dodis, a training and supervising analyst emeritus with the Boston Psychoanalytic Society and Institute, and he was a clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and is the author of The Heart of Addiction, Breaking Addiction, a Seven-Step Handbook for Ending Any Addiction and the Sober Truth. And his forthcoming book, of which he's a part, is The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess a President. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Lance Dodis.
Thank you.
And we were just speaking with Rick Wilson, a Republican strategist who was on CNN last night, where he and most of the other pundits on the panel were responding to Donald Trump's rally in Arizona, and Rick Wilson said Donald Trump alternated between being a whiny six-year-old who's had his Nintendo taken away and between being a cranky old man who's being out there condemning everyone who doesn't worship him adequately. That does seem to be a paradox, maybe to me, not to you. Why is somebody who spews so much hatred want to be loved?
Oh, well, I think that those actually do go together. I see what you mean, but because he is so, he appears to have so much need to be admired, to be bolstered all the time, he then reacts to anyone who is not an acolyte, who doesn't fawn upon him, who doesn't play up to him. He hates those people. It's more or less either or. And we've seen this time and again when, although he demands loyalty from people around him, he has no loyalty to them. You know, as soon as they disappoint him or they seem to turn against him or even disagree with him, they're out. And that characterizes a certain kind of serious personality problem that he has. You know, it's one thing to say he acts like a six-year-old or he's a con man and so forth. All these things are so, but diagnostically, he has a very severe emotional problem, which we know about. It's not new. It's the same kind of emotional problem that many tyrants have had throughout history and many criminals have had. It's often called being a psychopath or a sociopath is the modern term. So sociopathy is exactly this. It's bad behavior, it's cheating, lying, it's a failure to have empathy for others or to really care about others, to have a focus only on yourself, and a willingness to harm others for your own ends. That describes most of Donald Trump's life and certainly all of his recent life. That is actually a mental incapacity. Normal people don't do that. It's not just that you're being bad or being, as somebody said, crazy like a fox. It's nothing like that. It's not just being manipulative. It's an inability. And we know it's an inability because Trump actually has done and said things that are not in his interest, but he can't keep himself from doing it. Even this latest rally in Phoenix, it's not in his interest to create more hostility toward himself, to appear like a fool, which he does all the time. I mean, a rational person, if he were just the manipulator, you know, perhaps if he were just a Richard Nixon, you know, he would know that politically he's harming himself. But Trump is out of control. And he loses track of, it's one aspect of losing track of reality. You know, we know he says things that simply aren't true. He doesn't seem to be aware of that. He doesn't seem to be aware. So that's the definition of a delusion. He says things that aren't so, and when it's pointed out, it doesn't matter. He believes them. So this is a very, very sick man. And the people who have said, you know, don't confuse, he's just being bad, he's not sick, don't understand that sociopathy is exactly this, and it's a very severe problem. Normal people have empathy. He does not.
So in other words, you're not insulting mentally ill people who, by and large, decent people who have a real problem. In other words, some people have suggested that, well, you know, don't insult the mentally ill. This guy's just a bad person.
Yeah, no, yes, that's a ridiculous, I know it's been made, it is a completely ridiculous, baseless argument. None of us in the field would ever insult anyone with mental illness. Our whole careers are based on trying to help people. who have emotional problems. This has nothing to do with that. And truthfully, I think most of the public understands that. No one is confusing a person who is depressed or who is anxious or a person who has schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, a major mental illness. No one is confusing that with Donald Trump. I mean, if you want to confuse him with somebody, you'd have to confuse him with other psychopaths, with other sociopaths. You know, people, as I said, the famous ones are the famous tyrants of history who have done what he does. They gather people around them who are loyal to them. They don't care who they hurt or even kill. They have no empathy, and they will cheat and lie to get where they want to go. That's not normal. It's not just bad behavior. It's a basic defect in what it means to be human.
So is that to say, then, that we should be grateful that Donald Trump is not a more effective tyrant? That
yes.
His mental illness actually is an impediment to him being even more autocratic and totalitarian even?
Yes, I think that's actually, that's right. That is right. And of course, the fear is that if the country has been able to be conned into voting for Trump, they might be conned again by someone who does it, but in a more clever way. You know, we must never forget that Adolf Hitler was elected. He wasn't, you know, he didn't rise to power through a coup. He was actually elected by the German people, who had no clue what they were getting into, and he ran on the same same platform as Trump. He's, you know, he took a nation that was devastated after a war, a lot of people out of work, humiliated, and he basically said, make Germany great again, just what Donald Trump said. So, you know, we've seen this lots of times, and it's important for the public to understand this is not about mental health in general. It has nothing to do with that. And it certainly, as far as the ban on talking about this, that is also extremely unethical. The so-called ethical Goldwater rule is unethical itself because it makes no sense. I can talk more about that if you'd like.
Well, indeed, I'd like to do that. And again, I'm speaking with Dr. Lance Dodis, a training and supervising analyst emeritus with the Boston Psychoanalytical Society and Institute. He was a clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and is the author of The Heart of Addiction, Breaking Addiction, A Seven-Step Handbook for Ending Any Addiction, and The Sober Truth. And he's a contributor to the forthcoming book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess a President. Let's talk about the Goldwater Rule, which was brought about by the American Psychiatric Association following the 1964 campaign of Barry Goldwater, where he was trounced by Lyndon Johnson. And the idea was that subsequent to that, no psychiatrist can diagnose a politician unless they've actually personally treated them. Is that an accurate summary?
Yeah, that is an accurate summary. The problem is, there are several problems. For one thing, the kind of diagnosis that they were talking about back in the 70s when the Goldwater Rule originated has nothing to do with what we're talking about. They were talking about psychiatrists who were making assumptions about the inner traumatic, specific, conflictual life of people. For example, this is kind of a silly example, but let's say somebody said, well, Donald Trump is the way he is because he had difficult toilet training. That's the sort of nonsensical thing that would be wrong to say. But what we're talking about has nothing to do with that. We're talking about observing behavior and speech. And in fact, the American Psychiatric Association itself, in its own manual, diagnoses people exactly that way. If you look at that manual, you will see that each diagnostic label is a list of behaviors and speech, which anyone can see. So it's nothing to do with that. And when the head of the APA said we shouldn't, to use her term, we shouldn't psychoanalyze him, she doesn't understand what psychoanalysis is. No one is psychoanalyzing him. We're observing his overt behavior and speech, which are clear. Now, the question about whether it's unethical is also it's self-serving for the American Psychiatric Association, and that's all. It certainly isn't helping anybody else. It's not helping Donald Trump. It's not protecting him, I mean. We've all noticed who he is already. But if you ask them, the American Psychiatric Association says that they want to protect themselves, and this is what they said, from a bad image. It makes psychiatry or psychiatrists look bad, they said, if we do this. That's no reason not to speak. That's actually a terrible reason not to speak. The other thing is, psychiatry is a branch of medicine, and medical ethics have nothing to do with speaking about public figures, nothing. Medical ethics has everything to do with how you treat patients. And that's why there are rules about confidentiality, and that's the idea if you don't talk about something without the permission of the patient. That's true. But Donald Trump is not our patient. He's a public figure. There is no medical ethical issue with him. There's only the issue that people want to protect their name. And the other point about, you know, it being a stigma about mental illness, as I said before, that makes absolutely no sense at all. So I think those are the main problems with, I mean, the Goldwater Rule is itself unethical because it tries to gag people at a time the nation could use some expert advice. Oh, and by the way, of course, no other medical field has this rule. If you see someone injured in a sports match, the next thing is you hear an orthopedist in another part of the country talking about the, you know, how he probably has an ACL injury in his knee and what the proper procedure is for treating it or what the prognosis is. Every medical specialty speaks about public incidents and public figures. Psychiatry doesn't want to do it for their own reasons and their own protection.
Well, it feels as though we're fiddling while Rome is burning, you know, nitpicking over the Goldwater Rule, when we should be talking about whether or not the man who has his finger on the nuclear codes, who can literally destroy the planet, is sober, stable enough. And of course, the word stability came up with Senator Corker, fellow Republican, who questioned Trump's stability very recently. That, to me, transcends everything here. And what troubles me about Donald Trump is he's already exhibited some strange obsessions, if you will, with nuclear weapons. The most recent, of course, and this is where it gets very cynical, it was the Trump administration that leaked the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, report on that North Korea had miniaturized their nuclear warheads. And that they leaked it to the Washington Post so that Trump could make a big issue, literally gin up a crisis with North Korea, where his rhetoric became just as nutty as the rhetoric that we expect from the North Koreans. And he was literally playing with nuclear fire in order to distract the public from maybe the Russian investigation, whatever. And now, of course, that situation has been somewhat cooled down, but still, it was pretty reckless on his part and very cynical. But I heard from some State Department briefers who briefed him very early. When this is the routine, when you become president-elect, you get a briefing by the State Department where they do a kind of round robin and they tell you about everything that's going on in the world, you know, give you a sort of orientation. And apparently in this first meeting, President-elect Trump in Trump Tower, all he wanted to talk about was what would happen if a nuclear weapon hit New York. And the briefers got very, very uncomfortable and quite disturbed by Trump. So I know I'm throwing out a bunch of anecdotal stuff here, but it gets to the heart of what I think is the real issue here. Is this man who you are questioning his mental health and other people are doing this and you're a professional, is he a suitable steward for the nuclear buttons which at any moment could destroy the world?
Not only is he not a suitable steward, but if you think about it, he is maybe one of the very worst people you would ever want to have in that position in the entire country. I can easily think of tens of millions of kinds of people in the United States who would be better at that because they're not so deeply disturbed. Most people aren't, you know. And this goes to the other issue about, you know, stigmatizing people with mental health issues. I don't mind if people have mental health issues. My goodness, they're, as you said, who doesn't really, you know? Lincoln was seriously depressed. He was a great president. But this kind of issue, this kind of sociopathic, severe character disorder makes him one of the worst people you could possibly have in charge, plus the fact that he's out of touch with reality much of the time. I did want to, so I completely agree with you. That is the bottom line here. He is completely unfit and horribly dangerous, and he should have been gotten out of office earlier, and I hope he will be gotten out of office soon through the 25th Amendment, if not impeachment. You know, it's a political, that's a political issue. Obviously, the people who are supporting him are, I'm sure, weighing their own political futures about staying with him versus doing the right thing. I did want to say one more thing about the Goldwater rule, which I forgot to say. That is, only the American Psychiatric Association has that rule. The American Psychological Association is different. The National Association of Social Workers is different. The American Psychoanalytic Association is different, and that actually came out recently as a news item. Nobody has the rule they do. Everyone else says, well, be circumspect, be careful talking about public figures. And everyone agrees with that. No one wants to have a Soviet-style system where, you know, if you don't like somebody, you put them in a psychiatric hospital. This has nothing to do with that, and it has nothing to do with politics. It has only to do with a national emergency with somebody who is a dangerous figure on a psychological basis, and it's simply unethical to not speak about it.
Well, there is some movement in regard to invoking the 25th Amendment. Representative Jackie Speier, the Democrat of California, has called for Trump to be removed from office using the 25th Amendment. And yes. Representative Zoe Lofgren, also of California, introduced a resolution calling on Trump to undergo a mental health exam. Of course, they're Democrats and California Democrats, which I guess disqualifies them in the eyes of the Republicans and certainly in the eyes of Donald Trump. But is there any indication anywhere that the Republicans, I mentioned Senator Bob Corker suggesting that Trump lacks the stability and competence to be president. That was pretty, I think, strong stuff. Any hints?
Well,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and if you go back to the campaign, there were a number of prominent Republicans who said that they would never vote for Donald Trump because he was a danger, including the general who was, what is his name, who was...
Colin Powell, you mean? Colin Powell.
Yeah, Colin Powell. Yeah, and a number of other very prominent, intelligent, thoughtful Republicans said that they would never support him. Look, at this point, it's, as I said, it's pretty clear that the Republicans are weighing their personal futures. My guess is that most of them are probably decent people who know that Trump is unfit and dangerous, but he was elected by their constituency, and so they're afraid. They're afraid to do the right thing because they're afraid they'll get tossed out of office. You know, it will require a change in public perception so that their personal political futures are not in doubt, and then they can go ahead and do the right thing. But, you know, there's not a lot of moral courage there so far.
Well, but surely it has to be done right and has to be done in a convincing way because he's got 35% of Americans absolutely living in Trump land where they are they're immune to facts and evidence. And he's got them convinced that the evidence that the fake news or that the mainstream media put out is fake news. So he's completely got them siloed. And they also, you know, represent the far right in this country, which is heavily armed and quite dangerous. So what could break that spell, do you think, that he has over his... Because that's why these Republicans are behaving in such a craven and disgusting way, is because they're worried about getting primaried by these crazies.
Well, there's that, but there... Yeah, I understand that. You know, there comes a time where you have to just do what's right. I don't know how else to say it. And one of the things that I think has a kind of big lie that's been propagated by Trump supporters is that opposition to Trump is political. You just mentioned that these people are Democrats, so you can't trust them. That's completely wrong. And again, I would use the analogy to Germany. If you were in Germany in 1932, would you say that opposition to Hitler was political? Because you were supporting the Weimar Republic or another party, not the Nazi Party. At some point, it stops being political. It starts being doing the right thing for humanity and for decency and to combat racism and anti-Semitism and other bigotry. At some point, you just have to do the right thing. The Republicans haven't gotten to that point yet, but we all have to hope they will. And I think that events like Charlottesville may push the public to enough outrage so that there will be the politicians will decide it's in their interest to finally stand up against Trump. I hope that day is coming soon, because the other thing that's very likely, you mentioned the North Korean crisis, the other thing that's very likely is that Trump will create, as he already has done, create a national crisis, which is a traditional technique of tyrants to rally people around them. You know, it's been true throughout history. In America, in the turn of the last century, it was the blowing up of the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor created an excuse to have a war with Spain. In this century, Hitler set fire to the Reichstag, to the Parliament building, so he could have an excuse to consolidate his power. I think that Trump is extremely likely to do that. That actually is, I mean, he's always likely to press the nuclear button, but he is, I think, even perhaps at least as likely to create a major crisis like with North Korea, and then the country rallies around a president in wartime. And that would be very good for him, for himself personally, which is all he really cares about. But it would be a disaster because it would turn people away from noticing who he is.
Well, I see this situation, just in closing, being paradoxically the opposite of that movie that John Frankenheimer made in the 60s during the Cold War, 7 days in May, which was about a military takeover of the United States, a military coup by a bunch of right-wing generals who thought the president was too soft on communist Soviet Union. We actually have a similar but inverted situation from that. We have a bunch of general officers, Mattis, McMaster, and Kelly. They're in there, presumably between Donald Trump and the nuclear button, at least we hope they are. And at some point or other, are we going to have a military coup to stop a madman from creating either a nuclear war or a wag the dog war in order to boost his ratings?
Yes, right. Well, that's right. I agree. I think that's a serious risk. And the antidote to that, if there is one, is predicting it. Everyone will know when it starts to happen again, when he starts to ratchet things up with Iran or with North Korea or with Russia or somebody. The next time he tries to create an international crisis in which he hopes that we will all turn to Trump, we'll know what he's doing. We won't be fooled by it.
Well, Dr. Lance Dodis, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Lance Dodis, who's a training and supervising analyst emeritus with the Boston Psychoanalytic Society and Institute. He was a clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and is the author of The Heart of Addiction, Breaking Addiction, A Seven-Step Handbook for Ending Any Addiction, and The Sober Truth. And he's a contributor to the forthcoming book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, 27 Psychiatrists and Mental Health Experts Assess a President.